Barry Ferguson. Played for Rangers, Blackburn, Rangers again, Birmingham, Blackpool, Fleetwood and Clyde. 45 caps for Scotland, almost 300 appearances for Rangers, 5-time Scottish League winner, 5-time Scottish Cup winner, 1-time English League Cup winner, currently manager of Kelty Hearts and, of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
It's a very trad football book, you know. It's a bit more like Dad picks up from W.H. Smith's on the way to Tenerife vibe.
I'm a 31-year-old man. I'm not going to sit and wait for a sad Dutchman to finish his food.
I could be playing against Diego Maradona, and it wouldn't bother my arse.
Well, I'll give you four words. Footballing drunk hates Blackburn.
He says this sentence. Now, does he mean front or back end?
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Geoffrey Chaucer, more Jeff Horsfield. I'm James Berg, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Lee Trundle's More Than Just Tricks and Park Ji-sung's My Story. That's sadly only in Korean. But today we're reading Barry Ferguson's Blue, subheading The Life and Times of Barry Ferguson. And reading it with me are Jet Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And well, okay, American thing. And welcome back, Tom Coles.
Hello.
Not as American. That one.
Yeah. I'm fine with not.
Or maybe that was your American accent. how are we all doing, guys? Are we all good?
Good. We got the resident Rangers expert back.
Yes.
Yeah. First Lorenzo, now this. I genuinely don't think I've ever seen a Rangers game either. So I've read more Rangers books than I have watched Rangers matches.
I just really like how even like, oh yeah, Tom, you're a Rangers expert. And you're like, what?
We should do that with more people. Just like make them arbitrary experts on something. Yeah. Like, I don't know, James Acaster on to be our Broth correspondent or something like that. He won't come on.
We know our place.
Big fans of Big Barry? That's a question to all of you.
That is the worst reaction that question has ever got.
No one's ever asked that question.
There's caveats.
Okay. Then this is about the book, you mean, not about Barry Ferguson, the person.
Well, the man himself. I feel like he put a lot of himself onto these pages, so
he did.
I think you can judge them quite similarly. And I had one view of him once I'd finished reading said book, and one view of him once I went
down
a Google hole.
Are you trying to like build up your essay word count?
Yeah. I went down a Google hole to kind of fill in some gaps, and he's a different man than... I thought.
That he presents.
He is. Ooh. For a man who presents a lot of stuff in the book, that is true.
Yeah.
There are other things missing.
I don't want to get to it too soon, but yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
There are gaps.
Oh, this is interesting. I'm looking forward to these coming out slowly during the podcast. Rangers expert Tom, just a quick synopsis of his career stats and goals when he was playing a Scottish football.
He played in midfield, I think, for a long period of time. And according to the book, he went to Blackburn and then back to Rangers, and that's where it ends.
Oh, well, he's the expert. He's.
Did you write the book with him?
Yeah.
Let's see what Amazon is saying. The book has 4.6 stars from 7 reviews. Still pretty good.
Yeah.
That's high. That is high.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Tom's given away a lot about what he thinks of the book. Here's a 5-star review from C. Walker. That's as in the letter C, not someone who walks on the sea. Jesus.
Oh my God.
That is a cryptic reference to Jesus, could be. The C could also stand for Christ. Anyway, the review is entitled Brand New Book Arrived Quickly. And it reads, Brand New Book Arrived Quickly, The Life and Times of Barry Ferguson. If interested in him, order this book. If not interested in him, do not order.
That's where we went wrong, isn't it? We shouldn't have ordered the book.
Yeah.
However, C. Walker did recently buy an espresso cup and said, keeps the coffee much warmer than standard cup. So we know he's a man of taste. We know he's a man of tastes. Okay. That's the first time I've gone into someone's purchase history for quite a while, actually. It was quite fun.
It's deeply creepy.
It's not my fault Amazon lets you do it.
I'm very concerned now. I'm never reviewing anything ever again.
I've already been on your account, Basil. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and of course, our friend Ken Zong is back with another chant. But first, in a sentence or two, what do you think of the book? Let's start with Tom, as you're back on the show.
Oh, well, I'll give you four words. Footballing drunk hates Blackburn. I think that sums it up.
That sounds like a crossword clue. Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
Someone in a cryptic crossword thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a headline. It's like a Daily Record headline. Nice. Okay, cool. Say no more, actually. Let's move on to Jack. I think that sums it up. What did you think, Jack?
I thought the book itself wasn't particularly interesting, but the context of the book is fascinating. Ooh. There we go. That's all I'll say. Cryptic.
That's a good headline as well. Not quite as explosive as Football Drunk Hates Blackburn.
Football Drunk Hates Blackburn. Context makes it good. That's my headline.
And Natasha Daniels, what did you think of the book?
I think it's, compared to the ones that we've read recently, it's very trad. It's a very trad football book. You know, it's a bit more like Dad Picks Up from W.H. Smith's on the way to Tenerife vibe. Whereas the other ones...
That's a really good description.
The other ones we've done lately are a bit left field, aren't they? This one was very much exactly what it says on the tin.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. Oh my God,
it was really Route 1, wasn't it?
You could read this on a flight to Tenerife quite easily, actually. It is a... I did fly through this book. However, I would say it is the ultimate premature book of the ones we've had so far. So he wrote it at 26, I think. And a lot of them have been premature. But Depay had at least, he'd like ventured into seven different careers by the time
he'd
written the book. Whereas Ferguson's only ever, as far as I know, he's only ever been abroad once. He'd been to Blackburn, that's it. I don't know. I flew through it, but it wasn't the best, to be honest. However, the name, as we've mentioned before on several things, is incredible. Blue, The Life and Times of Barry Ferguson. I love it.
I think there was a lot about the life of Barry Ferguson. Not sure about the times of Barry Ferguson. That's what I want to know. I wanted the external context of the world in which Barry Ferguson exists. We're talking 2003, the Iraq War. I want more of that, you know?
No, he does not want you to know anything else that's going on in the world, because trust me, I did my research. And he's hiding some real skeletons in that closet.
There's a bombshell coming in this episode. I really hope we're not going to get sued about it.
Is it linked to the Iraq War? Did he write
the Chilcot Inquiry? Yeah.
Stay tuned.
When you say he's got a bomb, there's a bombshell. Is it a WMD?
That's the smoking gun.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm desperate to hear this. So, I mean, the quicker we get there, the better.
Get through the podcast.
Come on. Get to the libel.
That's all I mean.
That's been most of our reviews, to be honest.
True.
Get to the libel.
But also, a very brief picture section. One of the highlights of the book, which Jack sadly hasn't got for reasons we'll explain in a little bit. But a picture on the back, incredibly high shorts. No one can see the thing I'm pointing at, but that is a high-waisted pose.
That's Simon Cowell's circa 2008 height.
Mm. Yeah, when Simon Cowell played in the Old Firm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Real low point for Scottish football, that one.
It looks like when you play Sunday League, and what they've got is four extra large shorts in the bag.
Yeah.
And you've turned up too late, and you've got the big shorts.
Yeah. Well, this is exactly what Dick Advocaat was trying to make sure didn't happen.
True.
Because Dick Advocaat hates long shorts.
No, he hates tight shorts.
Oh, does he hate tight shorts? I can't remember if he hates tight shorts. I listened to the old episode.
I think he hates tight Rangers expert, Tom.
Yeah, as Rangers correspondent, Lorenzo Maruso liked a tight short.
He wasn't
allowed to wear the shorts he liked to reveal his shaved legs, which was only revealed in this book, the Barry Ferguson book, mentioned Amoruso's shaved legs.
That's true. We got more context about Lorenzo Amoruso. I felt like we filled out Lorenzo Amoruso more clearly.
So in some sense, we do have the times of Barry Ferguson. There's context there, isn't there? Leg-based.
I think we should keep going back to the title throughout the episode. The book kind of kicks off with a foreword, but actually it starts off with some acknowledgements in which he thanks not one, but two Indian restaurants. then it's got a foreword by David Murray, the former chairman of Rangers. But the book itself was written in 2006, soon after he returned to Rangers from Blackburn. Well, at least the hardback is. I can see Jack looking at me. Jack, you messaged me saying you had a real bombshell because you have the paperback and it is very different.
It is very different because your book ends with Paul Le Guin coming in to Rangers after Alex McLeish's resigns in 2006. And yep. My book starts in 2007, New Year's Day 2007, with Paul Le Guin saying, as long as I am manager here, you will not play for this club again. You are not the captain of Rangers anymore.
Oh, my word.
And he talks about how awful this is and says it's really, really terrible. But the reason he says it's really terrible is that he doesn't know what to do because he talks to his autobiography like ghostwriter and says, what are we going to do? The hardback is already in kids' Christmas stockings. Like...
What, are we going to go around every child's house and take it out and then rip it up?
Rip it up? What are we going to do?
I'm pretty sure they'd be in quite a controlled area, so you probably could do it.
Yeah, that's true.
It was widespread, you know, sales.
Yeah, it wouldn't take too long.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, well, he's going to have to, like, go through the chimney and steal all these...
Yeah, it's like a kind of Grinch kind of style book.
Weird Barry Ferguson Grinch. No, but he was, I mean, he's genuinely like, what do I do? Like, I'm going to be kicked out and this book is coming out and I will no longer be captain of Rangers. And what, like, literally, what do I do at this point?
I can see why that'd be concerning because as Tash, Tom and I will all be able to attest to, the whole book is basically him talking about how delighted he is to be back at Rangers. So I cannot imagine how a book can start... the paperback is totally different because it presumably starts with that chapter and then just goes into the same book where he talks about how much he loves Rangers. But,
pretty much.
And how excited he is to stay there for the rest of his career, which well, is all he talks about in the book. And then now it's been ruined by this first chapter where it goes, well, I'm off. See
in
ya.
Fairness, the first chapter, well, the first chapter is called Paul Le Guin, which is a pun. Very clever. That was one of the puns in this book. One of the only puns? Did I get an extra pun?
Yeah, I think like you got the only pun in the book.
I got the only pun in the book. That's good.
That was a treat for paperback customers.
a pun
wait,
for you.
But so, Paul Le Guin didn't go.
He did go. Paul Le Guin...
Oh, has he gone in that part of the book?
So yes, so this is what's really confusing about it. The book starts with Barry Ferguson saying, I'm never going to play for Rangers again. And then midway through that chapter, Paul Le Guin is sacked and in comes Walter Smith and brings Barry Ferguson back into the fold.
Oh, okay. So that then resolves it. That's it. How convenient. What a convenient narrative.
This is what I mean. I literally think Barry Ferguson must have said to you know, David Murray, the chairman, like, literally, my book is going to be so hard to rewrite. Yeah. You have to fire this manager.
Those seven customers on Amazon won't have a fucking clue what's going on.
They'll all be, it'll be hell on the Amazon review site.
Yeah. I have to say, though, I much preferred our opening line.
Yes, well, yes. Tom, I know you're a huge fan of it.
I absolutely am. All great books have great openings, don't they? It's the best of times, it's the worst of times. but Barry Ferguson has opted for a Mark Hughes quote. You want to transfer? Fuck off at my office.
If anything, better.
He later goes on to talk about... Hopefully I'm not jumping too far ahead. But he later goes on to talk about, when he was a child, him having really severe night terrors.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And he says, if this book achieves one thing, it's small children reading it, realising if they have the same issue, they don't need to be alone. Now, if this is aimed at small children, why is he starting with a Mark Hughes quote saying, get the fuck out of my office? Know your audience, Barry.
Now children are only going to have nightmares about Mark Hughes, swear.
Yeah.
Well, Scottish children.
Replace my night terrors, now I just have a horrible nightmare about a scary Welshman. Something to fuck off out of his office.
We will get into young Barry in a bit, because that is... Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the strangest parts we've had of a book so far. But that first chapter, which we have, is Barry leaving Rangers.
Confusing. That's my second chapter. So
right, okay.
So my first chapter.
You still have that chapter.
Well, what's weird? The first chapter is like, you're never playing for Rangers ever again. Get out. No way. I'm gone. Now a new person. And then it switches back to Barry Ferguson in Blackburn, and someone telling him that he'll never leave Blackburn. So I was all over the shop. I'm a very.
Are you sure you didn't get like Alex Ferguson's book or something? You read a totally different one.
I think I got Alex Ferguson writing the Life and Times of Barry Ferguson. So he's all at sea.
So R1 is all about him returning to Rangers after his he went from Rangers to Blackburn for a bit to try it out, hated it, and then comes back. And it, the whole book basically feels like a PR stunt. I don't know where this was released, whether it was released through the club shop first of all, or what, but it does feel, it's all about his mistakes in leaving, and it's him trying to make everyone love him again, basically.
Yeah, it's a 300 word apology to the Rangers fans, isn't it?
It is.
Very little
is,
more than that.
300 pages, not 300 words.
All of the proceeds go to Rangers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, the Rangers charity. Not to the club, Jack, to the charities.
Okay. No. Well, yeah. To be honest, at the time, Rangers probably
didn't. So we can buy Barry back again when he leaves next time. which is true. Again, he's very tormented by the move and the fact he ever left Rangers. And then 3 years later, he's gone off to Birmingham again. So,
so weird.
I don't know, he didn't learn much, did he? Young Barry Ferguson. Young Barry Ferguson. And he's not that old when he wrote the book. He's 26, I think, when he wrote it.
He's 28.
However...
Oh, wait, he's 28 in my book, confusingly. Benjamin Franklin's style. I'm so sorry.
However, he grows up with a genuinely pretty tormented childhood. He has these horrible dreams. Yeah. And it kind of kicks off. I've got this sound effect lined up for the whole episode because I've noticed that for someone who's achieved a lot in his career... Most chapters are incredibly bleak, and he starts off everything very sad. He doesn't really find many positives and stuff.
See, so that's why I thought it was called Blue.
I've got this lined up. Every time anything sad happens, I'm just going to play this.
Great. I mean, the whole first half of the book, I don't think he mentions winning a football match.
No, just, he doesn't. It's true.
It's so bleak. It's like, oh yeah, we got beat by Hearts 2-1, then we went away on international duty, got turned over by Iceland, quick 6-0 drubbing from Holland, and then we went back to Motherwell smashing us 4-0.
Yeah, and in that time
he's winning games.
Yeah.
My granny lived in the middle of a cesspit where everyone was beating each other up. And,
oh my God.
Oh like,
yeah.
Jesus,
insert bell. Insert bell. here is the saddest bit. So we mentioned he has these dreams when he's a kid. I was stuck at the top of a hill and there was a thick forest on one side. No way down that way. On the other side, soldiers, glaring at me with their guns ready, would march relentlessly up the hill, coming to get me. Night after night, that went on. Closer and closer, I dreamed I was trying to shout out for help, but my tongue felt like it was crispy fried bacon. Which shouldn't be funny, but it's
really funny.
It had gone rock hard and was almost choking me. I couldn't speak and I would try to pull it out of my mouth. Every night in my life for those awful 8 months, I had those horrifying visions.
Wow. That is just awful.
Imagine very emo being... for a footballer, isn't he?
It's very emo, but also very. Like, if you watched, okay, genuinely, Tash, if you watched an emo video where it was the lead singer on top of a hill and surrounded by a forest and soldiers marching towards him, and the singer is horrified, tries to sing or speak, and crispy fried bacon fell out of his mouth. I mean, you're winning every single video award ever, obviously.
Yeah. It's the VMAs is cleaner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a My Parade style. Romance. Kind of, yeah.
Bacon fried tongue.
It's quite a sort of hefty chapter, this one, isn't it? He goes into quite a lot of detail about the dreams, and it makes you sort of lead you on to believe that there's some sort of hidden meaning there or something's happened earlier in his childhood.
Mm. Yes.
At the end of the chapter, he just says, and then the doctors gave me some pills and it was all right. There's
nothing. Yeah, yeah.
It's really anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
If this was the film, it would be like, you know, the only cure is to become captain of Rangers Football Club.
One thing that concerned me, actually, was Barry Ferguson has read more football autobiographies than we have, I think.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho, Roy Keane, Mick Quinn. Yeah, more well-read than us, again, which is which is worrying.
What are we bringing to this
He hasn't read Hux, though. He hasn't read Hux, as far as we know. So.
I wonder if he read Amoruso's.
Oh, good point.
That is actually a very good point. I wonder,
Amoruso, resident Rangers expert Tom Coles. Amoruso slags off Barry a little bit, doesn't he, because he takes his captaincy?
He doesn't quite slag him off. He slags off the decision and says... The captaincy was given to a sort of 22-year-old boy in a quite integral part to their season. So it's not Barry as such. He goes in hard on Dick Advocaat.
Yeah.
Which Barry, it's actually quite nice to see the other side of the coin here in this book, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is a terrific segue. Terrific segue, Tom Coles, Rangers historian. you're right. He really likes Dick Advocaat. What do we guys think? Do we change our opinion of Dick Advocaat from the way Lorenzo depicted him?
What was interesting, I thought, was there's a bit in Lorenzo's book where he's like, this guy was such a terrible person. What he used to do is he would, like, we would have these team meetings and we'd have these, like, team meals, and we could only start eating when he started eating, and we could only leave the table when he'd finished eating, and it was awful. And in Barry Ferguson's book, he's like, it was this great idea. What he did was, we could only start eating when he started eating, and we could only leave once he finished all of his food. It was great. It's so weird how it's the exact same thing. And he's like, great man management. And I can kind of see both of their points, because from Barry's point of view, it's kind of like, we're a team, we're together, and he's the head dog in this dog pack. Whereas Lorenzo Amoruso is probably like, I'm a 31-year-old man. I'm not going to sit and wait for a sad Dutchman to finish his food.
Do you think if Dick Advocaat had been eating Chrissy Bacon the whole time, Barry would have felt the same?
True. <It's usually.
laughs> Traumatized. Actually, to be honest, as funny as it is, the way he says it, it is a big thing to admit, and it is quite a nice... It is probably does help some people. It does sound like you went through something.
Yeah.
He's quite open about mental health stuff throughout.
Yeah, he is.
Later on, when we get to his injury, spoiler alert, he's very open around that. I thought that was quite refreshing to read, because most of the time when we read these books, they're like, I'm Superman and I had 3 minutes of physio and then I was back playing. And he's like, it was shit and it took ages. Yes. So that's quite nice.
True. Actually, the more we're talking about this, the more I like it. Which I don't remember when I read it liking as much, but you're right. He does. You're convincing me quite a lot with this. I also like a lot of the stuff with his brother Derek.
Yeah,
which I thought was very sweet. His brother Derek, who played for Rangers before he did.
I did not realize that his brother played for Rangers at all.
I really
felt like that. I didn't realize that he was part of a heritage, as it were. Of
And Alex is his dad. And his daughter is in the Black Eyed Peas.
And his aunt is the princess of... No, okay.
I like the picture of him with his brother at his 21st. That's
So the 21st is really interesting, because like he talks about how, you know, he's trying to make
his 21st birthday.
His brother's 21st birthday. Like... Yep. He's trying to make it as a footballer, Barry. He wants to be a footballer. He wants to play for Rangers.
But his brother, 11, isn't he?
He's 11, yeah. But I think he knows what he wants to do, and he knows who what his dreams are. At his brother's 21st birthday, he has all of these Rangers players around, like Ali McCoist and other Rangers players who I should know. But like, imagine, Rangers expert, like. Imagine being like 11 and all of your heroes are just turning up at your brother's your house for your brother's birthday. It's crazy. That kind of pressure is mad. And like, he must have felt that a lot, you know. He talks about at one point like how he didn't have a poster of his favorite player on the wall because his favorite player was like down the hall from him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's really sweet.
I don't think we had a footballer who's been part of a footballing dynasty on the show, have we, so far? Can't think. It's boring.
I'm trying to think.
All the Rangers stuff was pretty interesting. He does love Rangers way too much, though, I think. I think he overcompensates a little bit. Like, there's a bit where he says, at the end of my career, I'm not going to have any other opponent players' shirts because he doesn't want to take them. He's like, why would I want them? I've got loads of Rangers shirts. It's like, okay.
You've got loads of Rangers shirts, mate. Like, at one point he says, like, I wouldn't want like a jersey from a Palmer player. Who cares about Palmer?
Why is he single out Palmer?
Yeah, because he's being so rude to Palmer. That's not the weirdest thing, though.
Fuck
about
Herman
his
Crespo.
His Rangers obsession is really weird because he says that when he dies, he wants to be cremated in a Rangers shirt.
I've read the book that came out 4 years later. He says that about Birmingham.
I want to be cremated in Christian Duggery's...
I want Duggery to cremate me.
Yeah. But because like there are apologies and there are, I love you so much, I want to be cremated in your skin. Like...
And this one veers towards the latter. Yeah, you're right.
I'd say it veers very strongly towards the latter.
Also, another thing, just before this little bit I was going to bring up, which kind of shows this off, he does love to mention the word foreigner. Loves to call people foreigners all the way through the book. But that's by the by. Make up your own mind of that. And he says, but he also says all the time, I don't want to be considered a bigot, but foreigners.
But
But also, when the foreigners turned up, we'd really get into them in training just to see if they had it.
Just to see if they were proper Scottish. And he talks about how, like, oh well, obviously, in an ideal world, that every single Rangers player would be Scottish. But you know, I like foreigners. But in an ideal world, they'll all be Scottish.
That is true.
He said when he's a manager, he wants to have an all Scottish team, doesn't he? Just of really hard working players. I mean,
he can manage Scotland. The easiest way to do that. Yeah, the bit which shows he cares a little bit too much. I think he's overcompensating. Every time we win a trophy, I'm in that dressing room trying to eat bottles of champagne, and I will see a foreigner in the corner thinking that their captain is not right in the head. I don't understand what he meant by that. But like,
trying to eat bottles of champagne.
Yeah, he said trying to eat bottles of champagne.
What does that mean? Is he angry at the champagne?
I don't know.
Does he hate the champagne? Is it like, it's foreign muck, I will eat you?
Should we do it out of context?
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, Tash has got something lined up.
This book had more dodgy sentences in it than any we've ever read, ever.
I think you're possibly right.
There's some really weird sentences.
He knows what he's doing as well. I'm not having that he wrote some of these sentences and he wasn't fully aware of what he was saying. Because listen at this one, right?
Okay.
He looked down at me with that dodgy mullet and his porn star moustache and asked, "Is it sore down there? Welcome to the big man's game, son." You can't write that and not know what you're saying.
That's from 50 Shades of Andy Gray.
That is definitely from 50 Shades of Andy Gray.
Yeah.
Oh, that is deeply, deeply sexual.
Wow, that's hot. I'll be back in a few minutes, guys. Rangers expert Tom, I'm going to stop calling you that because you're also a man in your own right.
I'm not defined by this.
Yeah.
So my one is, I survived that trip despite Ian Durant coming out of the darkness and tickling my feet at 3 a.m. But then, slowly but surely, I felt like I belonged.
Do you think it was like midway through the foot tickling? He was like, yes, this is my home.
You.
A little bit more.
Just to sort of add context to that no context quote is that Ian Durant is a 35-year-old man at this point, and Barry Ferguson, I believe, is about 20 to 21, which makes this whole thing much creepier, doesn't it?
I mean, you are breaking the cardinal rule of no context, but I like it.
But good context.
If it makes it more weird and sexual than it did before, then I'm all for it.
Add away.
Yeah. Jack, what's your out-of-context sexy quote?
I got one. When I stayed at my grand's place, I would go out onto the veranda, look out over the scheme, and watch the local gangs knocking shite out of each other.
That's a great
Scottish.
That's
so good. I just love the idea of, like, looking out, look at all I survey, and just two guys smashing each other in the face with a bottle. Fantastic.
There's one as well that I'm not sure which way round he means it, so I'd like to get some clarity from you guys.
So, please.
The moment that he first gets announced in the Rangers squad, he says this sentence. Now, does he mean front or back end? I swear.
Great start.
I think I know what the quote for Tash is at the top of the episode now.
I swear I could feel my pants filling up right at that moment. Does he mean he was shitting himself or he was excited?
I assumed I obviously assumed it was the rear
the poop.
End. I assumed it was the poop. Because he's a very nervous boy. And
it could
he
be the
seems,
juice.
I don't think it was the juice. I don't think I'm going to put it out there. I think Barry Ferguson was too stressed to ejaculate at that moment.
No, but he was very excited about it.
Well, Lorenzo Amoruso might have been wearing his tight shorts. Sorry.
Could it be
Tom.
One of those sorts of excited wheeze that new puppies do?
Like... You know, at one point he does say, "I was as nervous and excited as a kitten." So,
I think we've cracked it.
We have cracked it. He's pooping and peeing. He's so excited.
He's all three at the same time. There are yours touched on the Scottishisms quite nice because there's some great Scottishisms in the book. It does sound like Barry Ferguson talking the whole way through. There was one. My out of context was I could be playing against Diego Maradona and it wouldn't bother my arse.
That is a great bit. And there's the bit with Lorenzo Amoruso like saying, "I want to take a free kick." and
penalty.
Yes. Like Amaruso's like, I want to take it, and Focus takes the ball off him and goes, fuck off, you FUD, which is great.
Yeah, FUD and what's the other one? Is Ned?
Yeah, Ned. FUD and Ned.
What is a Ned?
I think,
like,
isn't it
Chav, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an acronym.
Chav.
No,
it's quite
education.
Controversial, so
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
No education, something. Or no,
but is he reclaiming it because he was being called that when he was on the wrong side of the tracks?
There's quite a lot of nastiness in this book about the idea of the classist Scottish media being very anti-Ferguson, and I think that a lot of the reputation that he has does come from a sort of idea that he is, you know, this poor lad from the wrong side of the tracks.
It's a bit like the OC.
It is.
He's Ryan. He's not quite sure how to behave in his new environment, and mm-hmm. he's always trying. The trouble just keeps following him. It keeps following him.
What's happening?
Well, we've decided to reference one of the nichest shows from the early noughties.
Nichest?
Who's niche?
I can't remember. Niche.
No one's talked about the OC in years.
Well, you don't live in my house.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, Tash is on my team, right?
We all love the
unbelievable.
OC. Exactly.
Seth Cohen, my first dream boyfriend.
Very good choice.
What, before Barry?
Pre-Barry.
Pre-Barry.
Although, I have read this book before, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Pooping and peeing and coming all at the same time.
Guys, who wants this week's dramatic reading?
Oh, yes, please.
Can someone cue the dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Thank you very much, Jack. This dramatic reading is called Barry Ferguson Shits Himself in the Chain Ship. No. This story is called Bertie Vokes Recreates Braveheart. Here we go. This is during his Scotland career. Bertie Vokes, the German manager, took over Scotland for a little bit, and that's all the context you get. Here we go. I think there were those in the media with agendas against Bertie from the start. They know who they are, and some of the things they did to that man should leave them tossing and turning at night.
He does this a lot.
I want to put the bell in there again.
Yeah. He does that a lot, where he kind of talks about how the media should be disgusted at what they did, and loads of things sicken him. He always talks about how things I was sickened by it. I'm sickened by this. It's sick.
This is what I mean about the depressing side. He does always try to find... this is him playing for his country, and it's quite a happy story in general, but it always starts off with something that makes you a little bit depressed. but I admit there were times when he had a desire to fire us up into the sort of frenzy he had seen in Braveheart, and I couldn't work out what he was up to. Before a Euro 2004 qualifying game against Iceland, we were at our base in Cameron House, and Bertie split us all up into groups. Goalkeepers, defence, midfield, attack. Doesn't need to specify. So we could have separate meetings. Afterwards, I walked in with Lambo. That's Paul Lambert, I think. And the rest to find this massive saltier spread out on the floor with Bertie standing next to it. He said, "We will walk out, pick this up, shake the flag, and rouse the crowd." Like a dance coordinator. Like a choreographer.
Yeah, he sounds like he's doing the cha-cha
step,
slide.
Step, step, pivot, flag.
We'll change.
The flag. Yeah.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I burst out laughing for about 90 seconds solid. Specific time.
That is a really long time for someone to laugh.
Are you quite done?
That's maniacal, isn't it, at that point?
Yeah.
I think 10 seconds is a long time to laugh, and we do that a lot on this podcast.
True. We haven't done 90 seconds one so far.
We've not done... Should we do
that
again?
That's our Patreon content this week. 90 seconds of us laughing. It was schoolboy stuff. I just couldn't stop. Lambo and I were decking ourselves. Out of which end? And Bertie's face was getting redder and redder. He was raging. I had to hang about until the meetings were finished so that I could apologise. I said, "I'm sorry, Bertie. It's just not me. I'm passionate, but I can't do that in front of 53,000 people. He glowered at me and said, "We're doing it." We did, and I felt like a fool. It was half-hearted, and I just couldn't see the point. It does sound rubbish. It does sound pretty rubbish.
It does sound rubbish, but there's something very sweet about Bertie Vogts watching Braveheart and being like, "I want to do that. I want that to be my team."
Was that his research for the job?
Yeah, I think it was.
Why are you suitable for this job? Well, I've seen Braveheart a couple of times. All the Braveheart speeches, the "Call Me Muck Bertie," were all designed to try and get the fans inside, but it smacked of desperation. He was trying so hard, but that was the point. He had to force it. For me, you don't have to wave flags or scream "Freedom!" or paint your face to prove yourself as a Scotsman. I know it is there in me.
Oh, yeah. Aww. That's a shame. Oh, poor McBertie. McBertie sounds like a... a very disgusting burger, I would say. A burger that would immediately give you all kinds of intestinal problems.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't sound good.
You know, when sort of McDonald's move into sort of different countries and they get their own, like, a Japanese soy burger or whatever. Yeah.
The German one.
The German.
The McBurtie.
Enjoy the McBurtie. Bless them. I think there's something very sweet about this man.
Bertie Vogts, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Lovely Bertie Vogts. Trying to be Scottish. I could just imagine him listening to the Proclaimers and trying to get it. You know?
Yeah.
Or just like, yeah. Like watching
train
Billy...
spotting and shitting himself.
Yeah. This is what the Scots like to do. I don't know why he sounds like Dracula, I'm sorry.
There is quite a fun section when, just when he gets made captain, where someone writes a C in jam on his napkin.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
That's true. Really, is that funny? That's at Rangers, right? Or is it at Scotland?
No, it's at Rangers because it's just after it's been taken off Lorenzo Amoruso. Yeah. And Barry has to work out how to react. Yeah. Because he so can see like Lorenzo looking at him. So he has to kind of go like, ha 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 ha, how funny. And he laughed for 90 seconds straight.
Do you have to eat that napkin out of like something like this?
Yes.
So I'm like sea and jam on a napkin.
Lick it off.
That napkin will be stuffed in his mouth when he's cremated.
Okay. Disgusting. Talking of friendships in the dressing room, he doesn't really talk about his best mate, as he mentioned at the beginning, is his brother, really, which is nice. And it's very sweet and totally understandable. However, some of his friendships are a bit strange. He doesn't really talk about any close friends from the game or anything, or even from growing up. His best mates, as he mentions in the book, are a guy who fitted the alarms in his house.
He doesn't give half of them names, does he?
No, he doesn't even give them names. That's very true.
Tash, what are you talking about? That's alarmy. My old pal alarmy.
His other close friends are the guy who owns one of the Indians at the beginning that he throws a credit to. In one of the most famous scenes, which I know Tom wants to talk about, one of his friends involved in it is who he only refers to as his gardener. Doesn't no name, just my friend the gardener. It's basically that. And that is a scene called the Battle of Bothwell Bridge, which is quite dramatic, and it would have made a good dramatic reading, but it wasn't about Braveheart.
Also, the point of the dramatic reading is never to actually be dramatic.
That's not very true. But yeah,
it's terrible when they're dramatic.
He gets bottled.
I mean, it's quite a humdrum footballer's autobiography before this, isn't it? It's very sort of, you know, stories of the dressing room, you know, lads on tour sort of stuff. And then you turn the page to the Battle of Bothwell Bridge and immediately he gets glassed in the face. I think he needs like 35 stitches or something. Mm. And then there's people swinging belt buckles around their heads. It's like a all-off brawl.
It was a battle.
People kicking lumps out of each other.
Yeah.
It's a real change of pace, isn't it? It's a real, like... Hold on, this is a different thing altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, and his gardener's getting absolutely destroyed.
Still doesn't know his gardener's name.
The reason why it all happens is he goes back to save his gardener, basically. His gardener gets taken down and someone goes, "No, Barry, don't go back," and he does.
I've got to save my gardener. What is weird about that is he says, like, I shouldn't have been out, because it's just after they've lost 6-2 to Celtic and he'd been sent off in the match for... a bit of deliberate handball, which is ridiculous in itself. Like he's out and he's trying to drown his sorrows, and he says, like, I shouldn't have been out, I definitely should have been out, but then two people started going after my gardener and I was like, I'm not standing for that, I gotta go and save my gardener. And later on when he talks to Dick Advocat's like, you know, explain yourself, why did you do this, he was like, I had to save my gardener. Like, you can shout at me all you like for being out there, but you can never shout at me for saving my gardener. As if, like, Dick Advocat's like, you should have left your fucking gardener. Leave the gardener.
That's the Braveheart spirit that Bertie Vogts was trying to instill in him. It's fine.
Always save your gardeners.
I'll let the alarm guy get his head kicked in, fine. Never the gardener. I've got rules. Every man's got to have a code.
The alarms are done now, but my garden's going to keep growing. So. Yeah. Also, there's a great footnote at the end of this chapter, which Jack loves.
I love the footnote so much. The real Battle of Bothwell Bridge happened in 1679 when a force of 10,000 government forces led by the Duke of Monmouth and Graham of Claverhouse dispersed 6,000 Covenanters who had gathered at Hamilton. There was no Old Firm game that day. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Is that the only footnote in the book as well?
I think it is.
It's the only. Do you know what?
Exception for that one.
And I'm glad they did. I'm properly glad they did.
I read that this book was meant to be a historical story about the Battle of Bothwell Bridge. That's what it was going to be, and then end up being an autobiography. Okay, let's move on to Blackburn. The one little bit where he moves away, which he dwells on for as little time as he possibly can, because this is all about Rangers. He has to say sorry to Rangers. My favourite revelation from it is that Graham Souness is even weirder than we thought. please don't kill us, Graham. But there's this quote: at Blackburn, Graham Souness would tell me how he could literally sleep standing up, and I'd envy him because you need to be able to recharge your body at this level. Oh, he's a vampire.
There are two weird things about that. One is the fact that Graham Souness couldn't sleep standing up. The second, that's something that Barry Ferguson thinks is really cool and good.
Yeah, oh, sweet, man.
Oh man, I wish I could sleep standing up.
He would have said that so intensely, so I can literally sleep standing up.
Do you want to know why I won the Body's Beautiful competition at Butlin's? For my sleeping.
Yeah, really, 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 really horrible. But
this bit is, and I think because Tom talks about how like he hates Blackburn. He in this bit he tries very hard to say that he doesn't hate Blackburn, but he's very rude about Blackburn throughout this. Bit, like in a backhanded way, he's like when they play Bolton, which is the biggest match. You know, Bolton v Blackburn is this huge like old rivalry between these two. Well, it is a big rivalry.
I can see why going from the old firm to that is rubbish.
Absolutely, but he's very rude about it. He's like, they were all on the bus really happy that they'd beaten some shitty team called Bolton. I don't know if you've heard of Bolton. Am I saying that right? Bolton Wanderers?
And I was some wanker like, called JJ Okocha was playing against me. Prick Kevin Nolan.
Full of stuff like that, though, isn't he? He'll start by saying, you know, I'm not being rude about Blackburn at all, and then immediately goes on to be rude about Blackburn.
Yeah.
You know, I've been mischaracterised in the press as a drunk. I'm not a drunk, but you know, I love a drink. And it's all the way through the book. He says he's not doing something and immediately does it. It's incredible.
And at Blackburn, he suffers a horrible injury.
At Newcastle, yeah.
Against Newcastle, yeah. He says something like, you can tell it's bad because even Graham Souness was like, oh fuck.
It's a really funny like image where he's, because he's lying on the floor. He says it's something like his kneecap just pops.
Also, though, there's an unlikely angel who looks after him at this point. Do you remember who it is?
It's Craig Bellamy.
Is the person who kind of looks after him. He even says that Bellamy's a bit of a wanker when he's at Celtic, but he respects him because it's a bit like, was it Veronica who mopped Jesus' forehead when he's carrying the cross?
What is with your Christ references this week? What are you trying to do to us?
I was in a panic.
In a book that's already like huge about sectarianism and like bigotry, you're like, I'll just throw some Jesus references in there. Whoever fans will love that.
Jesus' forehead. Craig Bellamy is that person. I was in a panic before the drugs kicked in. Then I looked to the side and saw a guy trying to feed me a bottle of Lucozade to calm me down. It was Newcastle's Craig Bellamy, who wasn't playing that day. And when our paths crossed again in Old Firm matches, I couldn't ever hate him.
If I'd snapped my knee in half, I wouldn't want someone shoving a Lucozade bottle in my face.
Put a bit of that on the drip, put a bit of that on the knee.
It's the sort of thing children do, isn't it? You hurt yourself when they bring over like a Lego brick to sort of make you feel better.
That reminds me. My sister once like cut her leg open like with a glass table broke, and I was horrified and ran through the house screaming. And then I only stopped screaming to run up to her and go, "Do you want a glass of water?" so that is, yeah, you're right. Craig Bellamy is a 4-year-old child.
That good. Also sounds like something that Graham Souness would do as well.
Yeah.
Run around screaming.
Run around screaming and then go, I can sleep standing up.
We all loved Marvin Andrews at the end, the Trinidad and Tobago centre back who played for Rangers. What does he say? He says something along the lines of, "Don't worry, Barry. God will heal your nose after he smashes Barry Ferguson's nose open or something." But this Marvin character sounds incredible. He carried on playing just through like he needed to have. He did his cruise ship or something, didn't he?
There's some truth in the God will heal it issue, isn't there, with the nose? Because Marvin Andrews, yeah, he tears his cruciate ligament.
And then just keeps playing.
Refuses to get surgery, continues playing. He goes to see someone, I believe, called Pastor Joe.
yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Who, rather than telling him to get to a hospital immediately, gives him some sort of ointment that he has
gives
to
him Lucozade.
Gives him some Lucozade. gives him an ointment that he then rubs on his knee before every training session on a torn cruise ship. And yes, the maddest thing of this, it worked.
Somehow it worked. Yeah, I can imagine he was screaming the whole way through his career.
Yeah. I mean, he can't walk now, sure.
But, yeah.
But he played that game against Kilmarnock.
Guys, Ken is back with another chant about an old footballer. We excited?
Boom, yes.
Yeah.
We haven't had a little Ken chant for a couple of weeks.
Is it a Rangers player?
No, actually, Tom, you're not interested. It is. Oh, you will be. It's a Newcastle player. It's a former Newcastle player we got this week.
Ooh.
Well, that's perked. He's perked up a little bit now.
To the chants.
This is a running joke I do not like. To the tune of Kings of Leon, Sex on Fire. Here we go. See if I can do this justice. Oh. Yeah. To Murray Ketsbaya, our favourite bold Newcastle striker.
Oh, it works.
That's great. That's so good.
Right? He's back with a bang. But then the book ends. Well, actually, I say it ends. There's a few things about how he reveals he wants to be a fireman.
That's
so
great.
In the future,
I love that bit. He reveals that bit in a chapter where he's talking about how much he loves his like family. He's saying, like, oh, my family are great. Also, I'd like to run into fire.
It's a bit like Depay. It's like one of those things like, maybe I could just be a fireman one day. Maybe I could be a rapper. Maybe I could be...
He's really desperate to sort of paint himself as a hard man throughout the entire book, isn't he? And even after the fireman bit, he says, I think it's just because I'm obsessed with danger. Or something. Something equally embarrassing.
Yeah, it is something like that. There's a lot of stuff about his wife, as you mentioned.
He makes a very strange comment about her later on as well, where there's a picture of her in the book. She's a very beautiful lady.
Yes.
And he says something like, I'm no David Beckham. I look in the mirror and I know I'm no David Beckham. And she's no Victoria either.
That's true. I thought he was slagging them off because they're not like these big media personalities. They don't try and play the public personalities.
That's the sensitive version of it. I think, Tasha, you can definitely read it as my wife is disgusting.
Actually, talking of disgusting... I'm going to carry on my crusade against footballers talking about birth in too much details. I know, Tash, you love these things and you don't want them to go.
I love it.
I know you love talking about vaginas. So in the last month of Margaret's pregnancy with Carl was hellish. She had a low-lying placenta. I don't want to read that. I didn't read this book to hear about Barry Ferguson's wife's low-lying placenta. I don't know why I read it, but it wasn't for that.
There's some bits in the book that are so low on detail and others where you go, just less detail. Barry, come on. And it sort of goes, I don't want my family to be subject to, you know, media scrutiny at all. I want to keep them out of the limelight. And then he's banging on about his wife's low-lying placenta. Which is it, Barry? Which one?
You either let people into your life, let them see your wedding, or you leave out your stuff about your low-lying placenta.
Can't have your cake and eat it.
And in that same vein, he does the thing in that Beckham bit where he says, you know, people have said I'm the David Beckham of Scottish football. I'm not that. And then he goes, you know what, there are a few similarities.
My favourite one is that David Beckham has OCD and he's got MBS, messy bastard syndrome.
casually making fun of...
So shit.
I really struggled with questions for the quiz this week. And that, I'm gone. What does MBS stand for? Gone. talking of MBS... What about MBEs? I have no idea what your book ends with because it could end with all kinds of things. Does it end with the MBE?
Mine ends with the MBE. Like, on literally the last page, there is nothing else after this bit of the book. I don't know if it's the same in the paperback. It literally goes from talking about the Queen, saying it was so nice of the Queen to give me an MBE, to the cover of the other side of the book. It's done. It's so, like, abrupt.
Yes, it is very quick. And also, the thing I want to pick a bone with... Every chapter starts with a little pull quote at the top, which kind of comes from in there. And the one that's at the top is this: "I now pronounce you a member of the Order of the British Empire, Her Majesty the Queen." However, as he reveals a couple of pages later, he never even met the Queen. That is not a real quote. He's used a fake quote at that moment, as far as I can tell.
Speaking of fake quotes, there's one that reeks of being fake earlier on, where it's from a school teacher, not even a name, just a school teacher, and it reads like something from a sort of cliched Ken Loach film, where it's like, Barry's son, you better give up football, you'll never make it.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah.
Buckle down and fly right, and all that. It's so clearly made up.
It's like so definitely
the narrativization of it.
Yeah. That's a very good point. That is maybe he does pick and choose them a little bit. But
you'll never get the number 6 jersey for Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who do you think you are? Someone who'll get an MBE? Get out of here.
You'll never leave for Blackburn Rovers and then come back after 17 months.
And then go again.
And then go again to Birmingham and then later on to Blackpool before finishing your career at Kelty Rovers.
That'll never happen. And that was the life and... That was Blue, the life and times of Barry Ferguson. Before we did this book change you, Tash, I feel like you've been about to burst the whole way through. You want to give us this revelation?
No. There's just I was doing some research. I was doing some Googling, and it actually ties into Jack's version of the book, because he, in 2013, Barry Ferguson tried to right the wrongs against himself. And yes. He wrote an article about an incident in 2006 when the article was titled, Me, Paul Le Guin and the Loch Ness Monster Munch. Have you read this?
No,
I haven't.
Title.
And he didn't. So, he doesn't go into Paul Le Guin that much. I'm really curious. What's going on?
It's Scottish drunk hates Blackburn, but it's a pretty good
line. It's quite catchy. So I pulled out just a choice quote from it because I think it sums the whole thing up. But basically, it's about why they didn't get on. And he summarizes it in this one paragraph. Yes, okay. I might have eaten the occasional packet of Monster Munch, which might have been against his nutritional rules, but come on, for God's sake. Listen, I'm all for players looking after themselves and eating well, but no one's telling me a packet of pickled onion now and again takes years off your career. He's talking nonsense. Ignore him. This is on a daily record.
Is that why he lost his captaincy?
7 years later. Yes, later.
He's waited a long time to get that off his chest.
Yeah.
Are you sure that's not Matt Letissier? It sounds like Letissier. Did this book change you? Rangers expert Tom.
Oh, did it change me? Did it fill the front or back of my pants? Is that what you're asking?
No.
Is that the new question we're asking?
this last week I've been also reading a book about stoicism, which...
Briefly. You're not allowed to read other books, and also that's a...
Really briefly is about sort of keeping calm and like not worrying about stuff you can't change, and part of it is setting yourself these things called stoic challenges, which are setting yourself intentionally unpleasant experiences to sort of strengthen your resolve. So what I'm sort of saying is, Blue, the life and times of Barry Ferguson for the last 4 days was my stoic challenge. It was so dull. until there's like really extreme violence of sort of Clockwork Orange style in the middle in the battle
with
of
the gardener
Bothwell Bridge, but yeah, it did not change my life for the better, I should say.
Okay, but it taught you to remain calmer or something.
Yeah, it taught me to sort of how to handle difficult scenarios,
adversity,
such as reading books like this.
Wait, you're going through adversity to great heights. You're Darren Huckabee.
You are Darren Huckabee right now.
Yeah. Wow. Jack, did it change you?
I think it changed my perception of like the difference between a hardback and a paperback. Like,
that's true.
In the sense that a book can change so dramatically, and also like it really matters when you release your book.
Like, yes.
This book could have been entirely different. If he'd done it after the crispy bacon tongue, that's all we'd be talking about.
Wait, you mean he was 11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like the idea of like when you pick and choose when you do your autobiography, you should basically always do it at the end of your career. There's no point in doing it any other time.
And he had a really good career, and he went on to play for a lot of different clubs, and he went on to beat Arsenal in the League Cup final in 2011.
Why are we talking about this?
Great.
Why are we talking
about
this?
Okay.
And I think in some sense, like, he's he's sort of both hard as nails and really fragile. And it's all through the book, I think he just wants some sort of form of validation. He wants to be told he's good or told he's great. And actually, I think that MBE seemed to give it to him. So, you know, I'm
That's
pleased
true.
He's happy. I think.
And then it got ripped away by Paul Le Guin immediately afterwards.
Just very quickly, I think he really wants validation from the Rangers fans, and that's something he never quite gets. And that's quite
That's
sad.
True. Well, he did it initially, and then he lost it when he went to Blackburn. Yeah. True. He threw it away. Tash, did the book change you?
No.
Okay.
I'll keep it quick.
Perfect.
Sorry.
I took all your time up wanging on about stoicism for no reason.
No, I mean, it's true. I can say it all in one word. Absolutely not. Oh, there's two words. Absolutely not.
I'm kind of the same. Marks out of 10. Jack.
6.
Yep. I'm going to say 6 as well. Tom.
6. Oh, no. 4.
Okay.
Ah.
I'm going to say 5.
12, 17, 21. Oh, that's 5 1/4 again, right?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Same, that's our new score.
Same as Latisse. Yeah, exactly the same as Latisse. Okay, thank you for reading that. time now for the fun part. The quiz. For the quiz this week, you're all named after other famous Fergusons. So Tom, you're Sir Alex. Tash, you're Sarah Ferguson. Jack, you're Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas. Okay?
Okay, love it.
Question number 1. What did Barry and his fellow players give a night porter money to buy on a drunken night out?
Sir Alex. Oh, is it a guitar?
It is a guitar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's such a funny bit because he comes back and they buy him a guitar. They buy a guitar to say, please, you got to buy us a guitar. And then he's like, and it's amazing. The guy I was with just breaks out to an amazing version of Wonderwall.
Yeah, yeah.
like it's this obscure, bizarre song. I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you heard of
What's it
Wonderwall?
Yeah.
He then moved on to Kumbaya. It was... And then Ian Durant just wraps it around a lamppost.
Yeah, someone smashes it. Someone smashes it. Yeah.
Smashes the pieces.
It's an Animal House. Question number 2. Which two players does Barry expect to walk into the Scotland Hall of Fame in the future? Ooh. Two young players when he's writing the book.
Oh, Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas.
Yep.
Alan Hutton?
Nope. One player for United, one player for Everton.
Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas?
Yep.
Darren Fletcher?
Darren Fletcher, the United one.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
And the Everton one. Oh, God. This is so hard and dull.
I don't think anyone's going to get it. James McFadden is the answer.
James McFadden, yeah, there you go.
Of course. I can't do the messy Barca syndrome. Thanks, Tash. Who does Barry room with when he first gets in the Rangers team?
Oh,
Sir Alex.
Sir Alex is in quick.
Damn it.
Arthur Newman.
Is correct.
Ooh.
Tom Coles, he's good. You've paid attention to this book.
Rangers expert.
that stoicism book must be pretty good.
Yeah.
And finally, what prank does Gazza play on Gordon Drury? You're not going to get it?
No.
It involves an animal.
Oh, poking the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, you can get half a point for this if you get it.
I'm still not going to win, though. I should barely do it, should I? He puts a fish under his...
The car.
Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah. Hides it, so it stinks. Tom Coles, you won.
Yay.
Well done.
Max Ferguson winning again.
Sir Alex Ferguson, Uber and
Cheat.
Jack have
some
thoughts on that. thanks for coming back on, Tom. Next time we do Ally McCoy's book, you can come on again.
The great thing is I tried to think of a single Rangers player there, couldn't come up with one.
Anyone has any thoughts on the book or any questions for us, message us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram, or on Facebook. Review the podcast, subscribe, follow us. Any last words?
Sickening.
FUD.
Did we say FUD?
Yeah. You sickening FUD.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Natasha Daniels, Jack Bernhardt, and Tom Coles. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Barry for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Barry is now the manager of Scottish non-league club Kelty Hearts, where every game makes them run out with a Scotland flag and yell freedom, as Bertie Vogts once taught him. He gets so excited by it, Graham Souness can now not just sleep standing up, but also while running, swimming, and slagging off Paul Pogba. Impressive. Lorenzo Amoruso genuinely recently went on the Italian version of Love Island, of course he did. Bertie Vogts went on to become the USA's technical advisor, where he made the players watch Born on the 4th of July every night. The OC ran for 4 years on Fox, winning 12 Teen Choice Awards, and much like St. Veronica, Craig Bellamy was made a saint for his Lucas A-based miracles. We'll see you next week for more Football Book Club. Please review and subscribe. Bye-bye.